So welcome back to another episode, you guys, of the XL Tribesman podcast. My name is Kirkland, your host. You know, I'm trying a little something new this year where I like introduce myself, because every other podcast I just start talking and I'm like, what if someone's hearing this for the first time? They have no clue who the fuck I am. So I figured I'd start there. So tell the people, well, before we get into who my guest is today, I wanted to do a little bit of an introduction. So I met Jonathan virtually on Instagram. And of course, as if anyone else out there, if you guys already follow Jonathan, you know he has like impeccable style. Even when he's like, I just threw this on, it's dope. And so I, you know, reached out to him last year and was like, hey, I want to feature you. And then when you sent the photo over of you in that tux, and it's like you, it's like a silver tux, it's like a silver pattern tux, and I was like, "Yep, I'm gonna get him on the podcast one day. I'm gonna work the nerve up to get him on the podcast." And then here we go.
Look at us now. We're here.
Right, we made it. So tell the people a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself. Tell them, you know, who Jonathan is, and let's, you know, dive in.
Absolutely. Kirkland, first of all, let me just start by saying thank you for having me as a guest, man. I don't get a lot of opportunities to sort of voice over the who and the why behind The Weeknder. And I think
this is
a really good opportunity. Yeah, man. Dude, you would be surprised at like how many people are just following and don't know the background. So I'm definitely excited to do this. Secondly, thanks for the kudos. Like I honestly just be putting on clothes, bro.
Nah, that's a little more than just be putting on clothes. It's a lot of coordination, and now you got the mini me. Y'all be coordinating. It's a little more than just throw on some clothes. This is a concerted effort to be fly. So let's not.
I'll give you that. but my name is Jonathan Jackson. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. Georgia born and bred. So like true Southern boy. Boy, man, like from the outskirts of it.
What part are you from? I would be remiss if I didn't ask, what part of Georgia are you from?
I'm literally just west of the city. It's called Douglasville.
I know where you are. I know where that is. Yeah. Oh, you are born at, okay. See, when people say, oh, I'm not a native, but I've been here a really long time. So when people say, I currently still live in Atlanta. So when people be like, oh, they're from Atlanta, and I'd be like, oh, where you from? They'd be like, oh, I'm from Atlanta. No, you're not. If you're from Atlanta, born and raised, you're usually from somewhere else. And you're not from Atlanta. You from Decatur, or you from College Park, or you from, like you said, Douglasville, or you know, you either way out in Macon, or, you know, somewhere, but.
Don't bring the 478 into this. But yeah, so like all of my family is from there as well. Most of my folks grew up in like Kirkwood area, so very familiar.
Oh, I know where that is too. I mean, it's too expensive for me to afford now, but I know where that is. I know where
it was not always that way, brother.
you can enlighten us, you know, newbies.
Look, gentrification is a thing, but we'll discuss that at a later point. So yeah, went to Georgia State, Georgia Tech, and Emory. I'm a veteran, so I was in the United States Navy.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for your service.
Thank you for your tax dollars, because you pay my bills quite a long time.
Yes, that is exactly how you get paid.
And yeah, so now I work at Facebook. I'm a project manager and have been doing that for about 2 years. But to sort of get to the nitty gritty and like why we're here, The Weeknder, man, like, back in 2016, 2017, I was honestly going through a life crisis, mm-hmm. and trying to figure out who I was. Did a lot of soul searching, reading, just trying to figure out like which way was up, and wasn't really coming to a clear answer. Mm-hmm. So finally, I just resorted to a Google search, and I'm like, what is, like, how do I figure out what my passions are? And the most immediate and top response was like, what do you think about first when you get out of bed in the morning?
Oh.
I'm like, okay. So the thing that I devote the most time and energy to, like in a normal non-COVID world, is what the hell am I about to put on today?
Oh. And
that kind of spiraled into like this idea. Well, if I'm putting this much time and energy into like figuring out what I'm gonna wear, people need to see this shit. Like
they do. The internet is glad for it, just so we clear.
So like, okay, let me start a blog, but I don't know how to do any of it. I'm just like looking at the landscape and saying, okay, these are some folks who I feel like who do it well. Ryan Styles, NYC, Blake Scott, David Frere, like, you know, just a couple of cats who I feel like we're doing it the right way. And so I took that model and was like, okay, I'm going to leverage social media, but I know I need like an actual website to point people to.
Right.
Man, I kid you not, I bought a domain and put together a website in 72 hours.
See, that is what I'm talking about. So many people are, and me included, because my story doesn't go that way. Like, I spent 7 months doing market research before I actually put out my website. And I had that moment one day where I was like, you gonna do it or you ain't? Like, either you gonna shit or you gonna get off the pot. Because it's like, after a while, you start doing so much research, you start to talk yourself out of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because really, I wasn't doing research. I was just trying to find something that would make me feel like, oh, I don't need to do that. That's really what I was trying to do.
So for everybody who's listening to this, I'll say, please strike somewhere in the middle.
Right. Neither one of them. Well, no, I like the 72 hour. Go for it. And it's like jumping off the cliff and you figuring on your way out. I'm pretty sure every day since that day, you figured out how to do something better than you did the day before. I guarantee that.
100% I agree with that. But I think I've been fortunate to have like really great people in my circle who have helped me to sort of leverage like their insights and mine to combine and create something that's like worth visiting.
Got but it.
I don't think everyone has that circle.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
For someone who like maybe is sort of going it alone and doesn't have like a whole bunch of resources to reach out to, that market research piece and like making sure you're not just throwing your money down the drain becomes really important. Because at the time I had a little bit of expendable income. So I was like, if I lose however much it costs for this website, I'm fine, whatever.
I'm fine.
But that's not everybody's story.
I see what you're saying. I see. Now you got to be all responsible. See, that's that father talk, being all responsible and shit. Like, spend that money, figure that shit out later. But he's right. You got to, you know, moderation.
Absolutely. And I mean, in the very same breath, right? Like, the space that you're in, which is analysis paralysis, right? Like, you gotta make a decision. So don't just spin your wheels for the rest of your life and never do anything. Like, there's the planning and then there's execution. Both of them are necessary for you to be successful, so.
And that's it right there. See, I think for me, I got stuck in the planning phase and I never wanted to execute. And I feel like I've along this journey, I've been encountering a lot of people who are in that same boat. It's like people, they plan, they read all the books, they read all the podcasts, they buy all the informational, you know, ebooks from people, how to start a blog, how to make money. They do all the research. It's like they are career students, but yeah, they never want to actually take the experience that they learned in school, so to speak, and go look for a job.
Hey, look, if you're having trouble getting started, bro, just give me a call. Because I will pull the trigger for you. Ain't no problem. Ain't no problem. But yeah, so started a domain and very quickly realized like, oh shit, I don't know how to build a website. So reached out to some friends, sat down for about a 3-hour session, and we got like the initial like skeleton of the website put together. I'm like, okay. I need some support. So I reached out to another guy who actually worked with me at like, not only work, but in school. And we sort of did the refinement piece because having a website and not being able to capture data doesn't make sense. So no. Like, I think those two things combined sort of have helped me to like shape the way that I approach my audience. So yeah, did that back in 2017 and have been engaging or generally engaged with the same photographer over the course of the entire existence of the Weekender. So like he and I hit it off, and it was really sort of a value proposition thing. And I think this might not work for everybody, but it definitely worked in my situation. Again, dug into my network, reached out to a photographer. He was like, yo, I can't do this, but I know someone who can. So reached out to the second guy and I'm like, hey, Don, look, have a proposition for you. You're a new photographer. I'm a new blogger. I don't have, you know, $1 million to just give you on a regular cadence. But what I do have is a gift of gab. And I know that I can leverage my gifts to make sure that I send you more work on a residual basis. Okay. So the value add for you engaging with me isn't dollars and cents that you're going to see directly from me. It's follow-on business that I'm going to continually shoot you. And I kid you not, Kirkland, bro, I sent this man $15,000 worth of work a year.
See, and I want to get into that. You see, that's actually one of the most important topics when people are first getting started, right? It's the conversation that's always had about, okay, like, how much work do you do for free? Or how much... But the way you proposed it is a way that people never usually propose it, where they say, I can't pay you per se, but I'll make sure you get paid. Absolutely. It's like, it's always, oh, do this for me for free. And then what do I get in return?
Right. Absolutely. And like, it's not just the conversation, right? Like, I think he and I sat down and I explained to him what the vision was and like, the value play I was going to try to make to other people. And it was a buy-in situation as opposed to me just saying, hey, do this for free and then I'm going to get you back. No. Because you have to deliver on him seeing results. If he hadn't seen like the residual impact of the work, it would not have lasted as long as it did. The reason right. why we severed ties is because I now live across the country. I live in San Francisco. He lives back in Atlanta. It doesn't right. make sense. But like the very next day, I'm taking him out with me. Like we go do a shoot and then we went out to a happy hour and everybody I bumped into at the happy hour, I'm like, yo, this is my photographer. You need somebody to shoot, he got you.
Yep.
And that turned into him being booked for events, homecomings, clubs, like induction ceremonies for E100, like everything under the sun that was like an extension of my network, he now had access to.
Access to. See, that's it, right?
It's the access piece. I'm not like, I know I don't have $15,000 to give you out of my pocket, but I know I can find it for you. Mm-hmm. And it's going to come in the form of several different types of events and meeting with people. All you have to do is show up and do you. Mm-hmm. If you show up and you deliver the same kind of quality that you give me, people will rebook you, bro. It's yep. not a problem. Nope. And I have no issue with you getting money outside of me. That's another thing, because people feel like, and we gonna pause for 2 seconds because Kirkland raised his glass, so I gotta raise mine.
I mean, cause like, that's it. Like, this is what happens when you're a student of the game, but continue.
I have no issue with you getting money outside of me because it was never about inhibiting your growth. I wanna see you succeed so we both can be successful.
Right.
Let's just communicate. Let's just communicate. Tell me what you need so I can make sure we get it for you. That simple.
Mutual beneficiary things are all right up my alley. That's my thing. It's like, how can you and I both win? I think I took away that concept very early on. I always understood it to be true, but I think what happened is later on, Issa Rae gave me the language when she said that most times people, when they're growing, trying to grow and be successful, they're always looking ahead of them instead of looking to the left and the right of you. And when she said that, it gave me the language to be like, that's exactly what I've been doing. I always look to the people who are coming up with me, like what you have, what I have, what you have, how we can put these three things together and create a masterpiece. And so we each can grow financially and grow, you know, in our respective fields. So the fact that you are telling this is like just a stamp of like, I'm thinking the right things.
Bro, confirmation is so critical in life. Like, I think there's no sweeter moment than having a conversation with someone and then that same topic and the same response surfacing in another venue. Like, hey, you know, listening to Issa, oh, this makes a lot of sense. And then 2 weeks later, a year later, a month later, somebody brings up the same thing and is like, hey, this is how you execute, bro. That's such a win. Such a win.
Yep. And that's how I feel right now. This, I'm executing properly.
100%. So yeah, like, work with the same photographer for the majority of the existence of the blog. I will say that, like, that delivery piece, like delivering on what you said you would do, is so critical. And I know I've already said that, but like,
that's how you have to say it again.
No, it's so critical, man. Like, in the conversations with the sponsors that I've had, like, I've always introduced us as a package deal.
Yep.
So, hey, yep. You know, yes, I'm the face, and yes, I build the written content, but this can't happen without this person.
Without the visual content, and this person is responsible for that.
Absolutely. Yep. And even furthermore, this is someone you should be considering to help you manage your visual content, because the reality is, if you're reaching out to me,
that means you already like the visual content.
Absolutely. You see something in me that maybe you're not getting already. I can't, like, bro. So one of the sponsors that I previously worked with, and I feel like maybe we're not at this point in the conversation, but let's just dig in.
Oh, go ahead.
So we had an initial discussion in store, and I'm like, hey, you know, I don't need to be paying full price for your products.
Just like that, straight like that.
I don't know if that's the best approach.
Hey, listen, go for the kill. Sometimes it's the winner.
Honestly, like, kicked it off that way. And the guy, like, brother of color, he just laughed hysterically because he was like, you know what? I do see you in here a lot. And I'm like, okay, cool. We good. Who do I need to talk to about getting this discount? And he was like, oh, well, you know, you might be able to talk to the marketing manager. Just see what he says. He gives me the marketing manager's phone number. I call him, leave a message. He calls me back like 2 weeks later. And he's like, look, I think it makes a lot of sense for us to engage with you, but we need to have like a really clear pathway for how that's going to look. So you put together a proposal and you come sit down with me and like my team, and then we'll just talk.
Oh.
And it seemed like a really informal discussion, mm-hmm. but me coming from the industry that I was in, which is consulting, like, I know that you might just pull in whoever the hell you want to this conversation. So I put together a presentation deck and made sure I had like all of my numbers and metrics ready to go, so that when they asked those critical questions, I was ready to sort of just spit info. I don't know if any of y'all are Greek out there, but I'm talking about, I pledged me.
Right.
I know so much about my metrics and who my audience is and how it all breaks down, that when somebody hits me with a, well, tell me how this is gonna land with your women base. Okay, well, women are 46% of my overall base, and as a result, this is how many of them are engaging with my content on a regular basis. So let's say my engagement rate is, I don't know, 36%.
Uh-huh.
We'll break that down. These are the numbers. Like, when you can give them that level of detail, uh-huh. they're like, oh, he's about his shit.
And he knows it, right, through and through.
And ironically enough, you know, I go and sit down for this meeting, and it's not the marketing guy. It's the president and CEO. And the Southern
right. director.
I'm like, and their general counsel. So
whoa, that the meeting got heavy.
It got heavy so quick. I walked in, I said, it's kinda hot. How y'all good?
Y'all mind if I take this jacket off?
But I think what it said to me was, okay, cool. Your thought process was correct, making sure that you're like uber prepared for right. the discussion. And then secondarily, they're not here to play games. They're trying to make a deal. So how do we get to a close today? And they're like, look, we can give you this much. And I'm like, no, because you're just putting a number on the table. let's talk about your overall marketing budget. Let's talk about what it costs me to execute what you desire, which is like, you're talking about me generating content on a weekly basis. And it's not a single post. It's multiple posts per week over the course of a 6 month period.
Right.
Cool. This is going to cost me X amount. So how do we meet in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can double the original number we gave you, but we can't give it to you in cash. So let's split the number in merchandise and cash. We'll pay you out on a quarterly basis.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, okay, that ain't no problem. So now I walked out with double what I anticipated with a merchandise budget. And I actually have cash value to surrender to my photographer as well. So
look at you.
Look, we're going to split this 50-50 and I'm going to give you some of this merchandise budget because I know I don't need it all. We're going to run up a check. Let's do it.
Listen, okay. So right there, what you're talking about is, okay. So that for me personally, that was level 102 for me because I did not discover how to do deals until 2018. And that was 2 years into my site. So needless to say, I probably lost out on a lot of thousands of dollars because I did not know how to leverage my audience. I always thought, okay, well, I have this many followers on Instagram and that, you know, equates this much money. But really, you know, in 2019, when I learned, like, I have a specialty brand, that means just like when you go to the Porsche dealership, there's an upcharge when you need a service done because it's a Porsche, it's not a Toyota, right? So my brand is a Porsche. I need to be paid for gathering a specialty audience of people in one place that are ready, willing, and waiting for somewhere to spend their money because nowhere else wants to accept your money. Oh no, you're gonna pay me three times what I thought I was worth because you won't be able to get this many people in a room that are willing to buy your clothes because this many people don't usually gather of my kind. So once I learned that.
We need to be having more conversations, bro.
A lot more. Listen, I already see some things in the work because the way you talk and the way my work is set up, we need to talk. Because you seem like you were right at the beginning. You do got that gift again. Because I'm over here like, how much is it? Okay, all right. I mean, I don't even have a clothing brand, but I'll make one for you.
Let's do it, bro.
Yeah, man. That's so it's really important. So where did you learn this in college? Did you learn, what did you study in college? Because like, you're very fluid with it.
No, I appreciate it. So my undergrad is in political science. I honestly thought I was going to law school.
Oh, not even close. Well, if you was going to law school, it means you learned how to argue and litigate. So that's probably where this comes from. And you learn how to be analytical, which did play into what you currently do. See, it all go together somehow.
I'm going to derive these skill sets now. Huh? I said, we're going to derive these skill sets now.
I mean, listen, college ain't cheap. Even if it was, you know, free for you, it still ain't cheap.
For sure. So like what pushed me over the edge and like really positioned me to start to engage in these conversations is like my first, what I consider like big boy job. I was working for Deloitte doing consulting work.
Oh, does everybody at Deloitte do consulting? Because that's all I have. You only hear Deloitte with consulting and website management. That's it.
Okay, cool. Well, Deloitte was originally a tax and audit firm. So like, that's really the bread and butter. And you find out just how good they are at that when you leave. But we're not going to talk about that. But yeah, so it's also a really big arm of the work that they do now. And I think what it taught me is to anticipate needs in a way that like I hadn't ever considered before. So I don't want to walk into a room and not have all the critical pieces of information to ask whatever questions whatever questions I can anticipate from whoever I'm talking to, be it a CEO, a CFO, or a janitor. Like,
got it.
How would they think about what we're about to discuss? What do I anticipate they think they're going to need? And then how do I sort of 10X whatever that expectation is? And so it led me to like truly analyzing every conversation and trying to think about how to frame it and what the conversation looks like and how does it play out and what do I need to plug here to make sure that they understand that I get it without being so overt in my response that it's like, oh, this guy has no couth, you know? Like, those are the sorts of things that I'm constantly thinking about, and it plays out in my personal life and my professional life as well as with the blog. So, you know, just learning that skill set, I think, is something that is super intangible, but very, very valuable in the long term.
Very, because right now it's more important now than ever, because I feel like as we've moved, I don't know where we are. It kind of feels some days it feels like we're in the middle of the pandemic. Some days it feels like we're at the beginning. Some days it feels like we just started yesterday. I don't know. But like, I feel like it's more important now than ever because brands' budgets are getting tighter and tighter. So absolutely, you have to be able to, I mean, for lack of a better word, like finesse your way through a lot smoother, because you can't just say, oh, I have 10,000 followers, give me a check. Like, you have to be able to say, I have 10,000 followers, and this is what those 10,000 followers do, and this is what they'll do for you, and this is how many people engage, this is how many people generally buy, this is my general revenue stream when I work with. Like, you have to be able to break all of those different metrics down for a brand to be able to say yes these days. So I feel like it's becoming even more critical to be, you know, honing in on your audience. So I can tell you do your homework.
Absolutely. And I'll just, as a quick plug, like for like just a general, like, hey, if somebody reaches out to me, I can send this and say like, hey, this is what I've used previously. Even if you haven't engaged with a sponsor before, build one. And if you don't know what that looks like, give me a shout. Like, we can talk about trying to put one together for you. Between me and Kirkland, we could probably figure it out for you. Easy.
I mean, listen, I can figure it out. Well, we got you. All that, we got that. So, all right. So we got a good idea of what the inception of the Weekender. Your bio tells it all. Your thing is, you know, enjoying the 5 to 9. So I really like the concept, by the way. It's a fresh spin on fashion. It's playful. I like it. So for you to get all the way here in blogging, of course, like, where did your love of fashion start? Like, what was childhood fashion Jonathan like?
Bro, my mom used to play dress up with me, bro. Like, I was like,
oh, her. y'all would be in mommy and me outfits.
It's so ridiculous, man. Like, I look back on some of like my baby photos, and there's no good reason to have a 6-month-old polo down to the socks, bro. Like, it's just
it makes sense. It's how you got here.
Polo to the socks, Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein. Like, I was in it from day one. And it set this unreasonable expectation that I was just gonna be there my entire life. So even when while I was in college, I was like blowing money on clothes. I still have Jordans from school
that I need. Wow. It set a precedence that you always needed to be fresh. I get it.
It's in my blood.
Yeah. And it ain't going nowhere.
My son, he's gonna have the same problem, I'm sure.
I can already tell. Y'all already dressing up in daddy and me outfits. So it's already started.
Right.
So childhood you was real dressed up. I mean, you know what? I think it's very clear that children become groomed versions of their parents. So if your mom was grooming you to be like super into fashion, then it makes sense that you gonna come take that crown, and you've, you know, pushed it, you know, 1,000 miles ahead in fashion. So your son is gonna be like new fit, who this every day.
Honestly, I'm so excited to see him like dripped out. Just, there's no other way to put it. It's gonna be fun.
So what do you, what's been your favorite like daddy and me moment? How old is he, by the way? I think he's like,
oh, he just hit 5 months.
Okay, that's what I thought. He wasn't that older than a year yet. So y'all have not done any like crazy photo shoots yet, because I mean, I'm pretty sure they just gonna get doper as he gets older, right?
I'm like, when he starts walking, it's
over.
It's over. My favorite moment so far. So there's this company, and for any parents out there, they make these almost slim fit onesies. It's called Loved Baby.
Shut up.
I kid you not. I put him in that onesie and said, hey, look, I know this was $30 and way too expensive for a onesie, but like, I'm buying 5 more.
Wait, hold on. You didn't approach him and be like, I shouldn't be paying for these full price. You do that to them too?
But I'm not in the store. But no, for real, I'm down to have that conversation. I always like make sure I tag them on my posts and reach out to them and let them know, like, hey, look, you know, we're wearing your clothes. And they seem to always engage with me. I just don't know if they're open to partnering as of right now. So it's worth having the conversation for sure. But
it's in the air. It's coming.
You know, we're going to work it out now. We're going to work it out.
Yeah, it's coming. Okay. So I found the picture that I wanted to talk about. So in this season, season 4, I wanted to talk. I pull up like one of your, well, what I deem like one of your really great posts. And so I wanted to know the background story of it, because I thought to myself, you know, I'm also a photographer as well. So I'm both in front and behind the camera. So one of the things I know is that there's always a story about how a photo comes to life, because it's never just snap and get it. There's always something behind the story, whether like, you know, your shoe happened to fall off and I snapped it and you liked it anyway, or like there's always some crazy story behind how this photo came. So this is the photo that I wanted to know. How did this photo come to life?
Oh man, that's at Cafe Intermezzo.
Yes. In Atlanta.
Bro, so look, I'm about to give some cheat codes, and maybe this isn't like, I don't know, the most couth way to do this, but whatever. So the shirt that you see in that photo is from, it's either Barney's or,
I'm gonna say it might be Michael Kors. You tagged a few brands in here. I know Tom's is shoes, Ray-Bans is the glasses. So it's either Michael Kors or Bloomingdale's.
It's Bloomingdale's. That's what it is. It's Bloomingdale's. The shirt is from Bloomingdale's. So my photographer and I were like trying. So at this point, we were sort of mature in our interactions. And my look, we can't shoot every day. We can't shoot once a week. That's like too much. And it's taking time from both of our schedules. Mm-hmm. So when we link, let's just try to knock out like 4 to 5 shoots at a time.
Got it.
So this particular shoot was like number 5 of 5.
Oh, so you were ready to be done. See, people don't know. After your third look, you over it. I'm over it.
Bruh, and like everyone has like their telltale signs that they're done shooting. And mine is that I get like really silly and I don't be worried about the camera no more.
Okay.
So, bro, I kid you not. Like that shoot, I think we had maybe 100 shots. And of them, probably 20 of them worked.
Right.
And there was a lady who was there watching us shoot and was like, oh, can you take some pictures of me?
What?
In the middle of us shooting, bro. And he looked at me and I looked at him and I was like, do what you want to do.
Because at this point, I'm over it.
If you go to the page, there's like photos of this random lady that we posted in the post. Because I'm like, well, I'm not just going to waste these shots. And
oh, they were also, good.
Well, they were good shots. I don't recall how she looked, but the shots themselves were good. Not my cup of tea.
I see what you did there.
But like the reason why I focused in on like the Bloomingdale's or Barney's thing is because after the fourth shoot, I realized I didn't have a shirt for the pants that I was about to put on. So we ran to Lennox and bought this shirt. And I was like, I mean, it's dope, but I don't really want it.
I know what you're about to say. Every influencer does that, just so we clear. Most influencers do that.
I took that shirt right back to Bloomingdale's and got my money back. Now, I haven't done this a whole lot, but like I've had instances where I've asked someone to be featured and they pull up and just have on some straight bullshit, bro. Like, and like, I'm sorry, this being real. And like, I try to do a screening process before I ask someone to be featured. So I'm like, hey,
it's you know, the honesty for me.
It's like, I'm just being real. Like, if I ask you to like do a feature with me, come dressed to the nines. Like, do your best to show out. And even furthermore, like seeing that happen has forced me to think critically and be like, okay, cool. Send me some pictures of what you're thinking about wearing before we even go into the shooting phase. Like, tell me what you're about to put on. But I've had people pull up and just like not have on anything worth shooting in. So, I mean, there have been a time or two where we ran to the store and I just put it on a cart and whatever you didn't sweat through, I took it back. And whatever you did, you kept. It just is what it is. So, I mean, that's you the story. That's life.
I'm trying to get to where you are in life, just so we clear. I would be weak.
Hey, man, look. It was not my choice. Hey, I did not want to do it that way.
The fact that you had the ability to do it is where I'm trying to get in life. I do. Actually, it's funny. I want to take the brand a little further places, actually. Number one, I definitely want to do a lot more features, but I want to do a lot more original photos. But, you know, a lot of times the people that I want to feature, they don't necessarily live in Atlanta, so it's hard to do. But I definitely want to feature a lot more people that I shoot their original content, number one. Number two, I definitely want to be able to style them too. It's just, you know, I'm not there yet. But that's one of the things I'm working on, you know, with my
I have a bunch of ideas of how to do that remotely.
Oh.
Yeah. Let's talk.
Will do. I never thought about that. So I wanted to know, so of the 20 shots you picked, you only put one on Instagram. So how do you decide how many go in the blog posts? That's something I'm struggling with. So I want to know what other bloggers, how do they navigate that?
So no, I think that's a totally valid question. So you're like, the calculus for me and what I'm trying to balance is how much of this do I expose to the public?
Mm-hmm.
How many people do I envision coming to the actual blog post versus just being on the Instagram page or whatever other page you're facilitating? And then how do I keep something in the hole in case I'm missing content for a week or two? And like, what I will say is like over the past, I don't know, year, my content has been pretty sparse and it's because there's a lot of life events happening. So like
a lot.
COVID, I had a son, like I'm married, like these things are like very real life events. So
very
kind of been on pause. And but like once I'm back to my normal cadence, there was a post coming out every week at a minimum. and if not multiple times a week. So you have to have like in your mind, what is, not even in your mind, you should probably make a content calendar, just being real.
Yep, that I agree with.
Fortunately, I had people in my camp between like my content editors and you know, the photographer and myself, who were all on the same page. So look, these posts are gonna come out this day of the week. If we had 15 to 20 good shots, I'm posting 10.
Got it.
I'm posting 10 on the blog post, and then I'll probably pull, because I'm always going to put the best one in the blog post as well. I'm going to pull one of the best, one of the ones I didn't show in the blog post, and one of the ones from the blog post in sort of a reel to post on Instagram. Gotcha. So now, this is in my mind, it's enough engagement to point you to the blog post itself to go and read. But at the same time, recognizing that like the words you put on page should not be more than 500. Just because you're in a culture where people are not gonna engage with content for more than like a minute or two.
Ooh.
So
only do 300.
Facts. If you can keep it at three, please do. But I would say no more than five.
Nah, only my informational posts go over 500. But like, just like outfit related posts, 300. I mean, I find there's like a stopping point, and I feel like 300 words is it when it comes to clothes, because it's like, how many different ways can I say how dope an outfit is? And I feel like 300 words is the number.
For sure, for sure.
When I'm talking about something else can I write 500 words or 600 words.
The reason why I end up at like 450 is because I get into like, here's where we shot at. Here's why we chose this location. Here are the pieces. And here's how I made this look work, right? Because like, almost 90, I would say probably 80 to 90% of my closet is like custom tailored. So we're not even talking about like, you can go buy this off a rack. Most of the time I can't, because I'm 6'7", 280. Like I'm not gonna find clothes that fit me. So when I find something that works, of course, I'm like, yeah, let me get that. But when I find something that looks good, I usually buy that joint like two or three sizes up and then go get it cut to fit me.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have a pair of jeans that are not tailored right now.
Whoa. Okay, that's a lot of pressure. Who can live up to this? See, your mama got you started, and now you just... This is unrealistic attainability. We can't be out here telling sir, I have over 700 pairs of shorts. You think I could tailor every one of them?
Look, where there's a will and a tailor, there's a way.
Man, you is crazy.
You know what? And you're
in how many pair of jeans you got?
Right now, 23.
Okay. Think about this too. You also, tailoring every pair of jeans means that you're not allowing your body to do anything outside of the tailored look. That means you can't gain or lose too much weight.
This is very true, and it bites me in the ass sometimes, but.
I'm pretty sure it does, because dad bod is loping.
Bruh, and coronavirus is a thing, and folks been around eating.
Eating good too.
Eating good, good. But I think that like my order of prioritization is like, have I achieved the aesthetic that I'm looking for?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, like, I legit cannot buy that aesthetic off the rack.
It makes sense. I mean, you are a 6'7", you know, you are 6'7". That's buying off the rack is almost nearly impossible unless it's made for a tall person. and very rarely is clothes made naturally for tall people. So therefore, I totally get that part. But I just like, I'm just imagining to myself, it's like, so the cycle from purchase to wear is like, gotta be at least a month, because you buy it, you have to go get it tailored, and that takes a week or two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time. And like cheat codes, right? Like I look for things on sale. So
makes sense.
Levi had a really big sale. So I bought, and I'll also say this, like these high-end brands of jeans and stuff, I don't buy them. Like I could afford a pair of Amiri jeans, but like, it's not like it's no, because I'm gonna spend that kind of money and it's not gonna fit me the way I want it to. So I'd rather just stick with what I know and make sure I can go get that cut, right? So like, mm-hmm. I know that it's gonna take $20 worth of tapering to get my jeans to fit the way that I want them to.
Right, so spending, I get it. So if you spend $20 less on the jeans, then you get to even yourself out.
Right.
Makes sense.
So I hit that Levi's annual sale. I bought 6 pairs of jeans. It cost me like, you know, $250. And then I took each pair of those jeans to the tailor and said, yo, cut them. And that was another $120. So I got out of the door for like $340. And sorry, my math is off, but whatever.
That's fine. But that's like $40-$45 per jean. That's actually not bad.
It's not bad at all. It's not bad at all. But like, if you aren't willing to take the time, like when I see things on sale, even if I don't have like $1 million to throw at it right then, I will sacrifice in the moment, because I know that like it's better for me to spend $50 on a credit card and $300 of my actual cash.
Correct. So you get it when it's on sale.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I'll just go get it cut when I get a chance. I had a pair of jeans sitting in the closet for like 4 months that I didn't touch. And I wanted to wear them so bad.
wait, hold on. So you won't even wear them if they're untailored?
No. Because it's not going to lay over my shoe the right way.
You know what? You know what? See. You know what? I'm going to tell you now. Don't go looking through my closet. Okay? Because there's not one. That's a lie. I have 2 pieces of tailored. And they're suits. I have 2 tailored suits. Okay. That's about it.
Now, what I will say is, like, I have been doing a little bit of exploring and trying to find, like, ways to sort of beat the whole tailoring issue, because especially in COVID, like I don't want to go anywhere I don't absolutely have to go.
Right.
So like watching Devin on Deck and
that man right there,
I appreciate him.
Everything. Like
And then there's this other guy who's based out of the UK, I believe. His name's Ben JJ James on IG.
I know him.
Really solid guy.
Yeah.
Solid guy, and has like good, like big man advice, but even furthermore, like super body positive, which I think is like a good space to be in right now.
Yep. Agreed.
Between those 2 people, I kind of like am finding cheat codes for navigating this COVID space. And
so you still
kind of like those.
So the point is, I mean, you cannot not have tailored clothes. That's what you're telling us.
Different strokes for different folks.
Mm-hmm. And the folk said, I need tailored, because.
You know what, though? I will say this as well. There's a difference between just saying, I'm getting things tailored, and finding a tailor who works with you. So like when I'm in Atlanta, I go to one person to get all of my stuff tailored. Mm-hmm. I've been going to her since 2010. So when I'm in the city and I bring her something, she knows, hey, look, he's gonna get this cut and I'm gonna give him this price, which is different from the normal price because I've been with her for that many years.
Right.
That's the same thing too out here. Absolutely. Absolutely. The same thing is true out here. Like, I go to one place to get my clothes tailored. And I built such a rapport with them that, like, if I bring him something and I need it back in a day or two, he'll do it.
And that's not normal, just so we're clear, people.
That's not normal at all.
No.
Like, I'm talking about a whole, if I needed a whole suit tailored in 2 days, he would do it.
Yeah, and that's also not normal.
It would not charge me a rush fee. Just be like, here you go. So, I mean, I think what this speaks to, and something that I feel like people maybe don't consider, like, the relationship is almost more important than the business that you do with somebody.
Always, always. Not almost, it's always more important. Because
I didn't want to step out and say always, because
I think the reason why I think always is because I feel like if you have a good relationship with someone, money will always be beneath that relationship.
Money will always figure itself out if you have a good relationship with somebody. But like, I feel like some people don't have the same value proposition as we do.
I got it. So to them, they wouldn't see the relationship worth more than the money. I that's why you're saying not always. Okay. You know what? In my book, it's always, but in the general consensus, it's not always. I see.
I agree with you.
I've been enlightened here today, people. I've been enlightened. Now I want to move into a new space that's new for you, but new for me as well. I'm, you know, getting into my, you know, mid-30s. And so, of course, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is like fatherhood. You are a new father. And so I'd like to know, like, how are you managing being, well, we've been in a pandemic for the time you've been a father, but you've been preparing for it for a while. So how are you been? Well, I think that might have been the first answer to my question, but how have you been managing fatherhood while being an influencer, while being an employee? Like, how are you been doing and running your own business? How are you doing it?
All right, so here's the truth of it. I think people are too hard on themselves.
Okay. And
what I mean by that is, like, we come from a generation of folks who expect, like, instant gratification and you being able to do everything under the sun without batting an eye. And that's just not real life, right? Like, sometimes you have to do a cost benefit analysis and understand, like, where do my priorities lie? So early in the episode, and he's screaming in the background now.
Hey, that's a part of life.
Real life right there.
Right.
Early in the episode, you heard me talk about, like, shifting my post cadence because of life happening. And that's where we're at right now. Like, it's not,
you make that sound so eloquent, shifting my post cadence. I just really wanted to highlight that for a second. You made that sound like taking a break. It's like, it's easy. It's like, it's just lightened up a little bit. Don't worry, I'll be back. It's like, continue. That was just smooth.
We're going to get back to normal, but for right now, you know, like, it's just different. And the thing is, like, being okay with that is step one. But I think also there's a critical component of, like, what do you care about most? And what is your partner, if you have a partner, right? Like, what is your partner going to help you to facilitate? So she and I had a very real conversation, and I'm like, look, this is something I do. Like, this is a part of who I am now. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always commingle with being in a relationship well, mm-hmm. because there are people who just say stuff. And, like, in an effort not to be a dickhead or, like, to be rude and excuse my language, but, like, I respond because there's always this looming thought of, like, okay, well, how does my engagement play out as a result of me being rude to this person?
Right. You know?
So, like, she and I having those real conversations and saying, like, hey, you know, this is happening, but ultimately I'm just responding because it gives me sort of a better platform to engage with people with in the long term. Super helpful. The question is like, how am I managing fatherhood? And I would say it took a lot of planning and foresight to be able to be as decent as I am. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still a lot of room for improvement. And the reason why I say that is because like I grew up in a single parent household with my mom. So like, yeah, I have my aunt and my grandma as like primary supporting agents, but big picture, like I haven't had a whole lot of guidance with regard to what it means to be a father. Right. I know how to treat a woman because they taught me how to do that. But when it comes to being a dad, I think it's sort of still like a question mark in some ways. And so I'm constantly looking for a litmus test from her, like, hey, am I doing what you feel like I need to be doing right now? And in the very same token, like, do I feel like I've done enough myself? So, you know, is it taking unconventional roles? Like, some men don't change diapers at all, bro.
I heard that, but I was just talking in another podcast with another father, and he was saying that too. Like, people, men don't change diapers. I'm like, what you mean? So the baby is in the house and it's stank, and you ain't changing it? Like, help me understand this. Like, what?
That's not my story. That's not where I come from. Like, I'm gonna do everything that you expect and then some. So I cook, I clean, I wash clothes, I do dishes, just like you do, because we're a team and we should both have these skills. Right, like, he not gonna get raised by just you. He not gonna get raised by just me. We gonna do this together. So let's figure out how I support you in moments where you feel like maybe you can't deliver right now. If it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you want to rock, paper, scissors, like.
So y'all do like the movies do. Whose turn is it? One eye be open, man.
Real life.
Oh, it's my turn.
And I mean, it's worked for us. Like, we've had some difficult moments. I'm not going to lie. Like, we literally had a come to Jesus meeting at 3 o'clock in the morning in his bedroom after changing him. This was probably like this was like 6 weeks in. We're both sitting in there, and he had been up from like 10 p.m. to 4:30 a.m.
And you are.
We had a whole day. We had a whole day before that. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at her. She's looking at me. He's laying on the changing table. And I said, we can't do this tomorrow.
Go to sleep.
We can't do this tomorrow. But I think those are moments that, like, in the midst of it, are really bad. But in retrospect, are like the stories that you tell. Those are your war stories as a parent, right? Like, I remember when he wasn't sleeping through the night. And there are people who like call me now who are new parents and are like, hey, you know, how do I do X, Y, and Z? And I'm like, bro, you know, or sis, I can tell you based on my experience, this is how like maybe you should approach it, but understand that every kid is different. So like that's really where we at with it. He's doing a lot better. He's 5 months in, so he's sleeping a little bit better, but he's also teething, which is, that's a whole other animal. And he's teething early, because normally kids don't start teeth until like 6 months. He's got 2 teeth coming in, so we're gonna see how.
You know, when I'm Jamaican, by the way. Yeah. So when we were kids, they would dip their finger in the rum.
In a little rum and rub it on them gums, boy.
You better shut the fuck up and go to cot to sleep.
Hey, hold on. Let's pause for 2 seconds. You're Jamaican. Where's your family from in Jamaica?
My family, my mother is from St. Elizabeth, and my father is from Jungle.
Got you. So I have some friends and some exes who are from Red Hills.
Oh, I know where that is.
Yeah. Mm. We're going to leave that where it's at.
Very tough. Them tough no bumble clots.
I feel like this episode is going to get a lot of views.
I hope so. But it sounds like regardless of whether you win or lose, in the moments of it being too difficult, and maybe in a moment you fail, but the fact that you are so committed to the best possible outcome means that you're going to win way more than you lose. And I feel like, you know, what you've given was great tips. It's like, you know, sometimes you might have to rock, paper, scissors it, because it's a struggle that night. And it's like, you know, he won't go to sleep or she won't go to sleep. So this little motherfucker gotta go to sleep, because I'm sleep.
For sure.
So I feel like what my takeaway from that is that no matter what, being committed to the process is how you best adjust in the moment. Because it's like, and like you said, not giving yourself too much grief about not doing something correctly. Like you said, you know, if 3 days go by and you don't post, who cares? Your baby got fed every day. Great. One.
There's a whole human that is alive as a result of your actions.
Right. Right. So you won. You all right.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Actually, can I say two more things on this topic?
Mm-hmm.
One, communicating early and often, I think, is the best advice that I receive and now give to new parents. And what I mean by that specifically is even if you know that the plan is not going to work out the way that you want it to, having the conversation from the gate about what a potential plan could look like gives you a baseline to start from for how to address issues. So assume that you're adopting, or assume that your significant other is pregnant. Having a conversation from the gate about who's gonna change diapers in the middle of the night? Who's gonna manage household work? How are we going to manage the bills? When are you going back to work? These are things that people don't manage or don't really consider from the gate, but I think are really critical issues and could cause turmoil in the long term if you don't have an idea of what's going to happen, because everyone has different expectations.
They do. And a lot of times people don't tell you what those expectations are, and then you don't live up to those expectations, and then they get really angry with you and then want to cuss and do all these other kind of things when you did not tell me one drop of this expectations you expected because I was supposed to know.
You took the words out of my mouth. Unrealistic expectations or undisclosed expectations and expecting you to live up to them. That is a recipe for disaster. The second piece, and this may be an unpopular sentiment in the Black community, but I'm gonna say it anyway. Bro, we have been in counseling for several months. And it's not about us having issues per se. It's about, cause we really haven't brought up many, if any, issues in counseling. Mm-hmm. It's about having an objective third party to have a conversation with in the event something does arise. Because if we can't come to a consensus, ain't no point in us being mad in this household for 12 years because we couldn't figure out a solution.
When there's someone that could have helped you figure out a solution 11 years, 9 months, 3 days, and 67 hours ago.
Let's just talk.
Listen, I am the, and it's interesting you talk about that. So 2021, the site I've done a slight change. So it's still about fashion, but I sprinkle in one mental health post a week. And so, you know, I'm the biggest component for therapy. I was introduced to therapy by another podcast interviewer, actually. So I was interviewing someone, his name is Sid, and he told me how therapy changed his life. And listening to him talk about his story was maybe I should take my ass up there too. And it went just like that. And I went to therapy, and I've been in therapy for a year. And it's how did I live without this? Wait, how does anybody live without this? Wait, everyone should be doing this. Sign up now. That's how I think now. So listen, I love the way you framed it, because a lot of people think therapy is all about digging into childhood trauma. And really, it's not. It really does help manage your day-to-day activities. Like sometimes, like for example, yesterday in therapy, right? I told my therapist that I bought this expensive ass riding bike because I don't really want to lose some weight, but I really want to focus on my blood pressure. It's a little high and I want to get it down. So I said I was going to start doing more cycling. So I bought it in December. I've been on the bike maybe like 5 times. And I'm like, I can't get on the bike. And so he was asking me like, what's your deal with workout? And I was like, I don't know. It's like, you know, I'll tell him like, I can be committed to this brand because it's bigger than me. And then he said, but what's bigger than you? And I was like, what? He's like, what's bigger than you?
And that's not going to hit everybody the same way.
When I tell you he hit me like, bam, I said, hold up, man. I don't like you right now.
But I hear you, bro. Like, what? Like, you formulated this conception of something that is like, quote, bigger than you. But what does that actually mean? Like, what does it mean for something to be bigger than you?
Yes, and he's like, who's going to push this brand if you drop dead and die tomorrow? I was like, whoa. I was like, mic drop, just like that. And
questions that you don't, like, you generally, one, don't consider, but two, don't have an answer to in that moment because you haven't even thought about that shit.
Nope, like, not at all. Bro. And he was saying, you're thinking too much about the end result, So I wrote down, he told me to write it down, so I wrote it down. And he says, get on the bike and figure out the rest later. Because it's like, I'm always thinking about, oh, damn, I don't want to get on a bike because I'm going to have to ride for 30 minutes. And he's like, you're thinking about the wrong thing. Yeah. Get on the bike and worry about it less. Even if you want to start at the bare minimum and you want to ride for 1 minute a day, I promise you, 1 minute will elevate to 2 minutes. 2 minutes will elevate to 3 minutes. And eventually you'll find your way at 45 minutes. And at that time, when you find yourself at 45 minutes, you would have found enjoyment in the bike. Absolutely. And I was like, all right, cool. So I wrote that note and I put it on the bike. So every day I have to see it. Get on the bike and figure the rest out later. So I am the biggest component of therapy, okay? Because it changed my life.
I'm here for that 100%, bro.
So go to therapy. So actually, you just answered my next question, which is, what is some new tips for new fathers? So maybe we'll add that into that, making counseling a component of the relationship, because it is going to help you be a better father if you have clear set boundaries, if you know what expectations are expected of you, and then you can deliver, like you said. Like, if you know I'm changing the baby's diapers Wednesdays, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, then you know how to plan around that. But you know, when you watch movies and the wife is waking up the husband like this to get up and change the baby, and
that's the absolute worst, bro.
The fuck's happening here? I'm trying to sleep. Fuck you doing?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. Go ahead.
The other piece of advice I have for like dads in particular is like, be willing to do the research as well. And what I mean is like, moms just, and I'm gonna just scientific terms, right? Like, moms just had an entire organism removed from their body.
Yep.
So like, it's for all intents and purposes, it's a parasite. So you have this thing removed from your body and there's an attachment to it that moms immediately feel. And I don't know that that's always true for all dads, right? So moms are invested in most situations. And I know I'm putting a lot of caveats in here, but like, having done just a moderate bit of research, like, I know different emotional aspects to this, but most moms have like a really clear and defined attachment to this new human being that's on the face of the planet,
right? So
they're investing in that person's development and trying to make sure that, like, whatever they can learn to make sure that person is successful in the long term, they do. So reading mom blogs and what to expect when you're expecting, and I don't know, every book under the sun, like, are things that moms instinctively do to try to make sure that their actions are commensurate with the desired outcome. But I think in a lot of instances, like, we as dads drop the ball with investing that same level of effort into understanding. And so don't just depend on her to provide you an answer for, like, what you should be doing.
Right. You should be coming to her saying, hey, I've done some research. Like, I'm pretty sure one of the conversations you have to have is like, are you going to use bottle milk or are you going to breastfeed? It's like, and like understanding, like, what are the health benefits doing one versus the other? What does it do to her body? Maybe we do a mixture of both, because it's like, it hurts. I don't know. Maybe I feel like it were her having someone suck on your titty for hours. Like, so, like,
good point.
Like, can we do a mixture? Because this pain is painful.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just my two cents. It's not gonna work for everybody, but, you know, that's where I'm at with it.
Okay. Well, those are phenomenal tips. I mean, I think, you know, doing research is always going to make you more prepared at the job at hand. And clearly we see fatherhood isn't easy. because just
it's
like
a journey. It's a journey. It's a journey, bro.
I'm over here like one thing I thought about, and this is like super selfish, but I thought about it, I was like, damn, if I had a baby, I'll have to give up my office, and I don't like that. I was like, we'll just buy a bigger house.
To this day, like, anytime I get on a call where she's like, I just love that you take all your calls from your son's room. I'm like, man, if I had another choice, I promise you I would not.
Oh, I would be somewhere else, but I'm not.
But I'm not. We in a two-bedroom apartment right now. It is what it is.
You got to take them from in there. Makes sense. Okay, so as we wrap this thing on up, I want you to plug all of the things you have coming up down the pipeline, what you can talk about. Plug your site, plug your Instagram, plug anywhere you want the people to see you at, because after this conversation, they need to see you.
I love it. Before I close out, again, Kirkland, just want to say thank you again for having me on. This has been fantastic. I'm going to keep it real simple for the plugs. So Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, all at The Weekender. That's at WKENDER _. And the website is theweekender.com, spelled the exact same way.
Wait. I have a question about that. Where did you come up with the spelling for The Weekender?
So I wanted it to be WEEKENDER.
Okay.
Which one was already taken on Instagram, but two was way too close to the weekend. And I feel like was going to cause confusion. The weekend. Yeah.
Okay.
So the way he removed the E's from the back of the words, I removed from the front of the words. So it made sort of an analogous spelling, but not exactly the same. Also, I feel like I didn't say this, and I just want to say this. Mm-hmm. The reason why it's called The Weekender is because at the time when I was formulating the brand itself, I was basically living out of a weekend bag. Like that weekend duffel bag.
Yes. Well,
I was on a plane or like in another country or wherever every week. So when I thought about like what I kept most close to me, it was that bag.
It's a weekend bag.
Either in my trunk or on a plane with me wherever I went. So The Weekender. But yeah.
That was your life. You were The Weekender.
Absolutely.
Thanks. That was the little parsley on top of the food when it's done, and you gotta make it, you know.
Let me go ahead and garnish this conversation.
I like that. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for being a guest. This was an amazing podcast. You were so, like, forthcoming. You were super honest, and I really loved it. And I hope that how I felt translated to the audience when they hear it, because I absolutely love this episode. It's gonna go in the books for me. I like that.
Oh man, this has been nothing less than a pleasure, man. Thank you so much, for real.
No problem. Well, until next time, everyone out there in podcast land, from me, Jonathan, and the baby, bye.
Ta-ta.